Hi, I'm Samantha, a past guest on CJAM's Handy Link. You're listening to Handy Link on CJAM 99.1 FM, reaching high ground in Windsor, Detroit.
And welcome to Handy Link, sponsored by the Italian-Canadian Handy Capable Association, an organization that provides recreational and athletic opportunities to individuals with disabilities in Windsor, Essex. For more information, check out ICHA on Facebook. I'm your host, Cam Wells. In this segment of our show, we'll hear from Carolyn Dube from Fertility Matters. So, can you tell me a little bit about the work of Fertility Matters?
Yeah, so Fertility Matters Canada is a national organization that provides support, information, education, awareness, and we also do advocacy work for people who need to access fertility care in order to start or grow a family. We're also a registered Canadian charity, so the work that we do is all charitable.
So, in terms of getting started with the fertility journey, really, what are some of the things that might have an impact, might create challenges for someone looking to have a child?
Well, if we look at overall, fertility rates and who is affected by these fertility struggles, both men and women play an equal role. So about a third of the time the issue is with the female, and about a third of the time the issue is with the male, and the additional third of the time it's either a combination of both, or the issue is unknown. The fertility experts aren't able to pinpoint a cause as to why a couple or an individual is unable to conceive. So I think a lot of times when people think about or they hear fertility or infertility, they jump right to the issue being with the female. And I think it's really interesting when I have conversations with people to know that it's not just an issue with someone with the uterus, that the male or the person with the sperm can also play a role.
So, when you mentioned advocacy and education, can you tell me a little bit about some of the resources you provide?
So, as an organization, we provide several options for education. And it's all free for patients or for those looking for more information to participate. We have a weekly Facebook Live series called Figuring Out Fertility, where we interview experts in the fertility sphere about all kinds of different topics, right from how to know if I have a fertility issue to very specific topics on different fertility issues. For example, PCOS or polycystic ovarian syndrome, which would be something for females. We look at secondary infertility. We look at how to grow a family if you need access to a surrogate or egg, sperm, or embryo donor. We talk about, with reproductive experts, therapists, so people who specialize in mental health and counseling of people who are struggling to build their family. And all of that information is free for patients to access live or, of course, on our YouTube page or our Facebook video channel. We have blogs written by fertility experts, and patients also write their stories. So they they write their stories and we share them so that people can find that connection and that use that as a resource as support to know that they're not alone. So, in terms of advocacy, we have several different projects that we work on. One specifically is called Fertility Benefits Matter. We work with the patient advocacy group in Ontario. Their name is Conceivable Dreams. And we're having conversations with employers and insurance companies in Canada, asking them to consider having fertility benefits as part of their benefits package for employees. We've got research and data that backs that up, so we have those informed conversations, and people are really starting to listen and are interested in learning how they can better support employee retention and bringing in new talent to their organization. And we also do provincial advocacy, so talking to provincial government officials to have them consider public funding for IVF or fertility treatments.
So in terms of the mental health aspect you mentioned, I mean, one would think that would have a role in the employer-employee relationship as well, because somebody's struggling with this, odds are they're not going to enter into a workplace in their best frame of mind, so you'd think it would be in their own best interest to consider the benefits package you mentioned.
Absolutely, absolutely. When someone's diagnosed, the research really backs this up, and we know that someone that's been diagnosed with infertility, the impact on their mental health is the same as being diagnosed with a more significant health concern, similar to cancer. And yet we don't treat it the same. We don't treat the conversation the same. We don't provide the supports and the medical treatments in the same way. So we know that. We also know that women who are diagnosed with infertility or who are struggling to get pregnant, the impact on their productivity at work is significantly decreased, and that men and the impact on their mental health, especially when it's a male infertility diagnosis, can be quite significant. So supporting the health and well-being, especially the mental health and well-being of your employees, is incredibly important.
So in your time with the organization, has there been any success case that stands out for you?
In terms of, we've seen provincial governments really listening. The group in Ontario, Conceivable Dreams, has worked really hard over the past 5 or 6 years working with the provincial government of Ontario to get provincial funding, which has allowed access to tens of thousands of people that live in that province. And thousands of babies have been born because of the program, which is amazing. Part of the issue with fertility treatment is that it's very expensive. The average cost of a fertility treatment in Canada, an IVF cycle, which not everybody needs to do, but it's $20,000 typically paid up front that most people don't have sitting in a bank account somewhere when they're first starting to try to have their family. And so access to care is really hindered by the ability of someone to pay for this treatment for this medical condition that they have. So that's a huge success. The groups in Quebec, the provincial organizations in Quebec, have gone back and forth. There's been a decrease in funding. They used to be world-renowned for their program, and 4 or 5 years ago that changed. However, there are much more positive changes coming to they're changing their fertility benefits again, and so I'm really excited to hear what they're rolling out. The province of Prince Edward Island listened to their provincial advocacy, patient advocacy group, and rolled out a public funding model this past January, so a huge kudos to that province for putting family building and fertility care as a priority. So those are some of the highlights, I think, in terms of patient access and patients getting loud and asking for the care that they need in order to help build families in their home provinces.
I'd like to thank you for taking the time out to do this, but if you can stay on the line for a sec, that'd be great.
Great, thanks, Cam.
Of course. In this segment of our show, we'll hear from Nita Khan from Smile Canada.
So, can you tell me a little bit about your experiences with Smile?
Yes, of course. So, my own personal experiences with Smile, I'm actually fairly new. My name is Nitha. I've been working for maybe 2 months now, and it's been quite, I might sound biased, but it's been pretty amazing so far. I myself actually have a disability, and so coming into the organization, I guess I didn't really know what to expect, but the inclusivity, the diversity, just the engagement that they really could push for. Working behind the scenes, you can see how passionate everyone on the team is about spreading awareness, about making sure all spaces and activities are inclusive, that we include everyone's voices. And Smile really is for the families. We're very small. There's not that many people, but I can assure you every member on this team really just wants to help in the best way possible. And help not in the sense of assuming what families need, but help in asking them, what are your needs? How can we best support you? And if it's not through Smile, then who can we connect you with to provide you that support and help?
So, if you're comfortable sharing a little bit of your own disability story, that'd be great.
Okay, sure. So I was diagnosed with a genetic disorder back in 2014. It's called NF2. So that's neurofibromatosis type 2. Basically, your body just produces a bunch of tumors within, basically everywhere. And they're just floating around, but the issue arises if they start growing, and if they start growing near a nerve. So I actually found out about it because I had trouble hearing from my left ear, and they found out there was a tumor, so-called an acoustic neuroma, growing by my hearing nerve. And I've had countless surgeries since then, which have resulted in losing hearing in my left ear, so I'm completely deaf on the left side. I've lost facial function on the left side of my face, but have regained quite a bit of it through other surgeries, and then just other resections of tumors. So it's been quite a bumpy journey, and I think having both a visible and invisible disability has been interesting to navigate as well. So seeing Smile support children and youth with both of, you know, either visible or invisible disabilities, it's been very inspirational. And yeah, it's just been great to be a part of such a wonderful organization and charity.
So, how does giving back to the disability community change your perspective on the diverse types of people out there? I mean, it's one thing to hear about all the various disabilities, but to have a chance to stand alongside those affected. Tell me a little bit about how it might have opened your eyes, given you some new perspective.
100%. So I think from my own lived experience, I kind of saw it through like an individualistic lens. And then hearing about Smile, I was like, oh, okay, like I can kind of connect with the children and youth, but then reading their stories, I was like, wow, there's a variety. Like it's very, disability encompasses so much. And then being in this role as a service navigator and providing that direct one-to-one support for families, speaking with the parents and the caregivers, it's opened my mind up so much more that disability doesn't just affect the individual, it affects the family, which in turn affects the society at large. And I don't think many people are aware of like the impacts that that this has, especially if we don't have the supports or services, or these families are not receiving the supports and services that they need and they have every right to access. So Smile pushing to get these supports and services for these families and hearing their stories about how difficult it is to just like navigate the educational and healthcare, just those systems, is so difficult for these families. So it's opened my perspective into, yes, as like a country, we do provide support and services, but in terms of access, how how are we in terms of like access? It's not that easy. And unless you're in that position and going through these lived experiences, you wouldn't really know. Even myself, I feel like I'm fortunate enough to know what's available out there. I'm able to access it. So I didn't even see the difficulties because it was a bit easier for me. But for instance, some of the families we service are refugee and immigrant families who have communication barriers. They don't speak the language. So for them to get the help that not only they need, but their children need, is just so much more difficult.
So I'm guessing that a lot of the immigrant and refugee families are coming from places where disability services simply wouldn't exist, and they might not know coming in, yes, this is a possibility to support my child or my family.
Right. And even if those places do offer support and services, how do I communicate that here and be like, how do I get this? I know one of our service navigators, even just finding, for instance, like our Arabic speaking families, finding certain things like physiotherapy or occupational therapy, how to translate that into Arabic to describe it to families, even that's like difficult. Like they know of these things, but they don't know like the English word for it, for instance, or how to go about even finding like an OT or an SLP, or what funding is available for them. So there's many like different barriers that we might not see or we might not have knowledge or awareness of. But once you start speaking to them and getting more information about their situation and the needs that they have, then these things start coming to light.
So, to look at the converse side of things, in your time with the organization, has there been any success that stands out for you?
For sure. I know the first story that comes to mind is a single mother that we were providing support for. And this is when I first started, and I was just kind of like thrusted into it. She got community housing. She was approved for it, and she has three children with disabilities, but it wasn't furnished. There was nothing in the space. So I don't think you can imagine having a single mother with three children with disabilities with nothing in her space. How would they live there? So we really had to call out to the community and get support in finding furniture, anything to kind of furnish the area, whether that be furniture pieces, food, different supports that they needed at that time. And to do it in such a quick manner, we really had to get all hands on deck in a very, very quick way, which we were able to do thanks to the community. We called everyone we knew. We set out like posters, social media posts, and the feedback was amazing. I think even a month after that, we were still getting emails. People like, oh, does she need this? We have this available. If you know of any other families that need anything, we are always here to help. So these families, yes, they do go through a lot and they may feel isolated, but I think our reach to the community is also, it's very positive. And when you look for that help within the community, it is there, and people are always there to help.
Right. Thank you for taking the time out to do this, but if you can stay on the line for a sec, that'd be great.
Yeah, for sure. Thank you so much for having me.
Of course. HandyLink will be right back after these commercial messages, so stay tuned.
Jeff Shepley Excavating and Road Maintenance encourages everyone to be positive, exercise safely, and stay connected with family and friends. Keep in mind that following healthcare guidelines is our best way to protect the healthcare heroes and other essential workers who have helped us get through these challenging times. We've learned how to best protect ourselves and others, and vaccines are rolling out. Don't forget that better times are just ahead. A reminder from Jeff Shepley Excavating and Road Maintenance in Essex. Visit them online at shepleyexcavating.com.
Welcome back to HandyLink, sponsored by the Italian-Canadian Handy Capable Association, an organization that provides recreational and athletic opportunities for individuals with disabilities in Windsor, Essex. For more information, check out ICHA on Facebook. I'm your host, Cam Wells,
Earlier in our show, we heard a little bit about Fertility Matters from Carolyn Dube, and we heard the latest from Smile Canada from Nada Khan. In this segment of our show, Nadine Provost will be telling us a little bit about LLS. So, can you tell me a little bit about LLS?
Yes, absolutely. So, the Leukemia and Lymphoma Society of Canada is the only voluntary agency dedicated to all blood cancers in the country. We are an organization that was funded in Toronto by five women concerned with the lack of focus on leukemia research. So we have a dual mission. We're both serving Canadians affected by one of the 137 type of blood cancer, their family, caregivers, people living with a chronic type of cancer, and those who are readjusting to their life after their cancer treatment. And we are also funding research on different type of blood cancer.
So, how do you go about reaching out to the patient community?
We are doing a lot of work with the healthcare professional, the oncology hematologists, and also the oncology nurses. So we're making sure that their healthcare team is aware of the services and the support that we can provide them. We are also obviously very active on social media. We have a large database of Canadians affected by blood cancer, and we're sending them information about our new services, information about like any information that can help them improve their quality of life. For instance, recently there were a lot of communication about COVID-19 and blood cancers.
So, can you give me an overview of the specific services that you do offer, and maybe an example of how COVID was affecting blood cancer as well?
Yes, absolutely. The pandemic definitely brought extra challenges to the blood cancer community. It was very difficult to navigate the information on blood cancer and COVID-19 and also on the vaccine. At the beginning of the pandemic, Canadians affected by blood cancer were anxious. They were afraid that their medical appointment, test, treatment, surgery would be postponed. They were also concerned about receiving adequate cancer care, and they were concerned about safety. They were concerned that going to the cancer center to receive treatment was putting them at risk of getting the virus. Also, during the pandemic, they had to go alone to their medical appointment. It is very difficult. It's definitely adding to the challenge. It's very difficult emotionally. And also, going with someone that take notes and remember the information is also very helpful. So, all of these extra challenges were very difficult during the pandemic, and we did our best to adapt to the needs of our community. So we rapidly created a COVID-19 resource center in March last year to inform our community. We also offered them virtual support group. We were trying to help them break isolation. It's very difficult to going through a difficult experience such as a blood cancer and not getting the support, the physical support from your family. Having a lot of barriers to get professional support if you you feel anxious or depressed. So we did our best to fill the gaps, offering virtual support group, peer support to the community over the phone, and calling, doing outbound calls to our community to keep our fingers on the pulse of the community and being able to adapt.
So...
Yes.
Go ahead.
So we're definitely them. We're there for them. We want to help them navigate their blood cancer experience using a step-by-step approach to empower them. So we want to help them understand their diagnosis and their treatment options. We offer one-on-one personalized support, clinical trial navigation. We want to help them also navigate the
or manage the practical information. So how to tell my children I have a cancer, how to talk to my employer, and provide a safe space for them to fully share.
So in your time with the society, in terms of the support you've provided, has there been any success story that stands out for you?
Yes, I think I would like to share one specifically, I can share the details because it was in the Globe and Mail last year. There was a person in BC, in British Columbia, who reached out to us, and he was unfortunately out of treatment option. We connected him with a clinical trial in the US, and he was very successful with that clinical trial, and came back to BC, and he's still doing well today. So this is definitely a good example of how we can help people affected by blood cancer navigate their blood experience at each step of the way.
So in terms of providing support to those around the patient, in dealing with the diagnosis, how do you help them overcome some of the mental health aspect that comes with the fear of someone they care about having a blood cancer diagnosis?
Yeah, this is a very good question. It's an important one. Receiving a diagnosis of blood cancer can be a traumatic experience. And for instance, when you have an acute a diagnosis of an acute type of cancer, it's often mean that you need to be hospitalized right away. You need to start your treatment very, very quickly, and you don't really have time to process. So it's very important for them to know that they can have access to professional help, and sometimes they need to ask for it. But we try to help them navigate the different resources, try to help them recognize the sign when it's time to seek for professional help, and also we try to confirm that what they feel is normal, and that there's support available for them, and they are not alone in that situation.
I'd like to thank you for taking time out to do this, but if you can stay on the line for a sec, that'd be great.
Perfect.
Friends, when I hear about organizations like Fertility Matters, I'm always impressed by their work. The fact is, they're lobbying for new and better policies, just to give a little hope or the world needs it the most. For those who might be struggling with the idea of whether or not they can have children, it can be a very damaging thing from a mental health standpoint, from a self-esteem standpoint. With any condition, you should always look at the idea of hope. True, we might not have the answer we're looking for today, but if we can take even the tiniest step in the right direction toward the answer, we're a little better off today than we were yesterday. And if we can do that again tomorrow, eventually we reach our destination. A better, more equal world. One in which people don't have to look and say, the situation is bigger than me and there's nothing I can do about it. Because that is one of the most dangerous and terrifying things in disability life. The idea of hopelessness. Thing that I maintain never has to be there. I mean, if you're facing something, you can face it stronger standing alongside someone. Someone who can at the very least share a little moral support. Tell you things will get better. Be amazed at the impact this can have. But the fact is, it's happening to one, it's happening to all. We're all part of this great tapestry called life. And the more we stand together to create the future, the better our world becomes. This has been HandyLink. I'm your host, Cam Wells, reminding you, we're all equal. So get on out there and have yourselves a good one. Something tells me you've earned it, folks. We'll see you next week.